Blog Talk Radio.
What's up? This is Scott Stapp from Creed. You're listening to Andrew and the Drew Show.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Drew Show tonight. Thank you all so much for tuning in today. We have a great show for everyone tonight, and it's always such a pleasure. Please continue to check us out on Twitter at DrewBTR, as well as our website, thedrewshow.com. I mentioned this on a few of our previous shows, but just keep paying attention to our website. In the next two and a half weeks, we're having a major major turnover with our site, I should say, a major update to it. So we're going to have some contests on the site. We're going to be giving away some books and some autographed memorabilia that some of our previous guests have given us to give away. So please check that out. I want to mention something real quick, and I keep forgetting to mention this every show, but at the bottom, where the little box where you see me or hear me talking, I should say, if you scroll to the bottom and you do not see a chat room at the bottom, please refresh your web browser. And you'll be right in. You won't miss anything. It'll bring you right back to the same screen. Just refresh your web browser, and you will be You will have the chat room at the bottom. You can communicate with us, and you can ask any questions in the chat room as well. But again, thank you all so much, and we're so lucky to bring these shows to you. Even though we've been having some pretty bad storms in Georgia lately, it seems like every time we've had a show at night, we have the storm. So just hang with us, and we'll get through it. Today we welcome, and I have to say, one of the best guests we have ever had on our show, and I'm so excited about this. She won the gold in the 1996 Olympics and now has written a memoir entitled Off Balance. I am so pleased to welcome her to the show today, Ms. Dominique Macianu. Hey, Dominique.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great, and you?
I'm doing great. Let me first start out by saying I know how busy your schedule has been lately with you touring and you making all these stops, but it's such a pleasure you joining us. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, not a problem. Thank you for thinking of me to be a part of your show. I'm really I'm thankful to have been able to do it.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And now you live in Ohio, is that right?
I do. I live in Cleveland, Ohio, and I'm home for a couple days before I head on out again for the road, and it's nice to be with my family. I enjoy that part very much because it's been a whirlwind since the release of Off Balance, so it's always nice to be home and be mommy.
Yeah. Now, we've been braving 104 temperatures during the day here, and at night we've had some thunderstorms, but how is everything in Ohio?
It's been pretty warm. I can't keep the kids out too long. It's been pretty warm here as well, but no thunderstorms in the evening.
Right. All right. Well, like I said, thank you so much for joining me. And now, are you looking forward to the Olympics this year? Or are you going to London to take part in any of it?
I'm not going to London as of right now. I'm going to enjoy watching it in my living room with my children and my husband. I think this year my children will really understand it a little better. And so it'll be fun to be at home, but I will be communicating and writing my thoughts with the internet and then some opportunities that way with Huffington Post as a contributing writer. So I'm looking forward to that and doing a preview of London very soon. And, you know, my Twitter and Facebook, there's always places to write down my thoughts and on my Tumblr. So I'm sure you'll be hearing a lot from me about the Olympics as well.
Right. You know, I was a teenager during the 96 Olympics in Atlanta, and, you know, and we talked about this for a minute just in the screening room, but when my friends were watching baseball, track and field, swimming, and so on, in the Olympics, gymnastics was my thing, and I absolutely loved the Magnificent Seven, and you girls were incredible. What was your experience like being in the Olympics at such a young age?
Well, obviously, I knew the magnitude of the Olympic Games because I realized when there was 33,000 people in the audience for a podium training, and that wasn't even for competition, I understood that magnitude and spectacle of the Olympics, and I realized that it was, you know, it was unlike any other competition that I'd ever been to, especially being in our home country, and the immense amount of pride we felt because there were so many people chanting USA in the crowd, and whatever I was going through personally, I was able to be uplifted by all of that because there was such support from the United States family and just the country and just everyone rooting for us. So that was very uplifting. And even as a 14-year-old, I felt it. I felt that power and magnitude of what the Olympic Games really meant, and to be able to represent your country and put on the red, white, and blue. It's something you'll never forget.
Right, and unfortunately, I was never able to come to any of the Olympics in Atlanta, even though it was right down the road from me. But I go through Centennial Park all the time in Atlanta. That's where the opening ceremonies and all that was, of course. And have you actually been back to Atlanta at all?
Yes, there was a reunion that Today Show did about in 2007, and we went, you know, to Atlanta for it. So that was a nice reunion of the Magnificent Seven and my whole team. So it was a fun reunion. We went to the park and we took a picture out there, and it was really special. So it definitely is nice to get back to Atlanta. It holds a special place in my heart.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. And you've written a memoir entitled Off Balance, and it really tells a story about your past and your courage to stay strong in the hardest of times. In your book, you tell a story about finding a sister that you never knew you had, and we'll get to that in just a second. But before you found out about that secret, your life was hard at home and at the gym with the Carollis. How did you manage to stay so strong and focused no matter what was going on in your personal life to compete on such a big stage?
Good question. I think it was always my desire to be a champion and overcome any obstacle and adversity that came my way. I wanted to be an Olympic champion, and I wasn't going to let the coaches who treated me poorly to let that get in the way. I wasn't going to let that completely push me out of the sport. At times it almost did, and that would have been such a devastating blow to me had I let that completely get to me, because I really deep down loved the sport. Unfortunately, some of those adults made it much, much harder for me to accomplish my goals because they weren't as emotionally supportive. They weren't there to encourage and uplift the athletes, and especially me coming from that same culture. They had a connection to the old world, and they would use my father to enforce physical punishment on me. And that was what I feared the most, was that daily fear. And I wanted to let go of that and just do my job in the gym and just do what I knew I could do. But, you know, I think it was just my determination. Deep down, I was a fighter. I've always been a fighter, and I wanted to get to the Olympics and accomplish my dream.
And you mentioned about the mental and physical pain of it with the Carollis and with your dad, of course. But you were how old again during the Olympics?
I was 14.
14?
I was the youngest member of the team.
Right. And 14-year-olds, not saying they're not mature, but it's a different kind of maturity than a 25 or a 30-year-old, of course. And I can't imagine how you actually found the strength to do that, because, I mean, I know a lot of people couldn't do it.
I look back sometimes, and I don't know how I had the strength to focus. Just with all of that going on in my personal life and my family life and then being treated the way I was by my coaches, I certainly look back, and it's amazing that I was able to focus in the manner in which I did to accomplish that dream. But it just goes to show you that, you know, if you really want something in your life, you're going to be determined, and you don't see anything else except that goal. And that's how I was. I was programmed that way, that I wanted nothing to get in my way. But, of course, there were those obstacles at times that caused me to reflect and think, you know, is this really how it's supposed to be? I mean, I know other people aren't going through this, but I didn't have much time to really, you know, dwell on it too much. I mean, there are things that happened, and I had to keep moving forward, or else I would never stay focused, you know what I mean? I would have to continue pushing myself to stay focused, and that's what I had to do to get through the next day and get through everything, but because ultimately this was my dream too.
Right. Right, absolutely, and I said this a minute ago. I love your memoir and how personal it is and how it really speaks to the reader. So how long did it actually take to write this book, and how difficult was it for you to write it because you had to put so much of your personal life into it?
Oh, absolutely. Writing the book was a 7-year process. It was very empowering, but it was also difficult because I had never revealed myself like this before. It's revealing because I talk about a lot of unhappiness in my life, and that's unusual for me. I don't normally do that. I don't, you know, talk about these things. I don't even think my mother knows half of these things that went on because I just kept them in. I internalized things, and I kept it to myself, and a lot of my teammates didn't even know what was going on in my life because I wasn't going to burden them. I just came from, you know, from a different kind of family where we didn't talk about those things, and it was very healing as well for me. It took me every bit of that 7 years to process this book, but I really want to cast a wide net so that I can inspire individuals and tell all the parts of my story, you know, not just the shiny parts. And I want to leave elite women's gymnastics better than I found it.
Right, and I think that's absolutely amazing that you went through what you went through, and you're strong enough to tell that story. I absolutely absolutely love that about you, and I love the 2020 interview that you did as well. I was really hoping that it would have been a lot longer, but I really enjoyed that a lot.
Thank you.
And we have a question from our chat room right now. It says, let's see, when Dominique is from Kate, when Dominique went back to the Caroli Ranch in 2005 when making her comeback, did she see any changes there? Was the equipment better, the environment different, et cetera, from what you saw as a child?
Yes, the equipment in 2006, when I went back to the National Team Training Center, the equipment was all renovated. They had gone away with the old gym that I used to train in, and the National Team Training Center had thousands and thousands of dollars renovated into this new state-of-the-art facility. So when it came to the equipment, it was all up to date. Now, the treatment, it was still very different. These girls see the Carolis through a different lens now because they were my personal coaches. My family spent holidays with them. I got to see them around the clock. They were like second parents for a majority of my time with them. And so with these girls, they see them once a month. If Bella comes out, he barely ever comes into the gym too much anymore. He's now the face of USA Gymnastics and promoting at NBC as a commentator for them. But Marta Caroli runs the show like a dictatorship at the Caroli Ranch. And so, there's still elements of their old ways. There's no doubt about that. And there's almost pretty much complete autonomy when it comes to decision-making and Marta Caroli being in charge. Now, that's, unhealthy for our sport because gymnastics has never been, more physically demanding than it is today. And so going to these camps every single month is causing these coaches to force their gymnasts to do more than they would in their gym. So in return, this is harmful to their bodies. The Caroli's training methods from the 1970s are, they're not only obsolete, but they're harmful to our athletes and in turn detrimental to our sport.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, I would just add one more thing, that the governing body of our sport, USA Gymnastics, is bowing down to the Carolis, especially over the last decade. How else can one explain why USA Gymnastics has placed the National Team Training Center in the Caroli's backyard, literally? They act as if they possess some divine power to produce champions, but in reality, there are so many other factors that have resulted in the recent success of the women's program, and we have to remember a lot of those efforts are contributed to the individual athletes, their personal coaches, the sacrifices of their families, and finally the dissolution of the Soviet Union, because when the funds dried up in 1991, over time, a lot of those coaches from those former Soviet countries, they moved over to the United States. And so a lot of them make up our elite women's program coaching staff now, and their methodologies and philosophies have trickled down into helping our team USA succeed.
Right. Do you think that any of that can change, or what would it take for it to change?
I think we need to first marginalize the Carolis. I think we can have, anybody in place that would probably be better than Marta Caroli just because of the way she runs it like a dictatorship. You head on over to the ranch and, you have everything you want right there in your backyard. You can make all the decisions. And I think we have to marginalize them and change where the location of the National Team Training Center is. It should not be in someone's backyard who is benefiting financially to have a bias, a bias towards the decision-making process, because that's unfair to the athletes, because if they're being rewarded financially because of these camps that are being held monthly, well, they're not going to want to cut those camps to, let's say, I would say let's have camps every 3 months. That way we save the bodies of the athletes. I'm all for camaraderie and building these camps up and having verifications, and things are healthy. But we can't have it, to where someone who has near 100% autonomy and who's benefiting financially in their backyard, I just feel like that's completely, it's unfair, and it's very biased in the decision-making process.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how much of it's true, but I don't know if you ever remember a movie called Little Girls in Pretty Boxes. It's a gymnastics movie. And I actually heard there were some parts that the director of that movie, the producer of the movie, wanted to put some real life things in there that were about the Carollis. Have you ever seen that film?
Yes, I didn't see the whole thing, but one of my friends was a stunt double in it, and so I've heard a great deal about the movie, and I pretty much know, you know, a lot of the things that are in there. I don't know everything, but I'm aware of that movie, and
right.
You know, a lot of those things were, for the most part, they happened, and so they wanted to depict that.
Right now, we're with Olympic gold medalist from the 1996 Olympics, Dominique Mascianu, and she has written a memoir called Off Balance. Dominique, you actually go around in your spare time, and we're going to get right back to your book, I promise. But you go around in your spare time, and you go to camps and help teach these people, help teach these kids gymnastics and the right way to do it. Would you like to have a camp like the Carollis have? Well, not like they have, but, you know, similar to what they have, but a good place?
Well, you know, I love being able to travel and impact these children's lives and be able to be an inspiration for them. I don't know if a camp is something that I would want because I know how much dedication and time, and I've spent so much of my life in the gym. I just want to be able to spend as much time as I possibly can with my children also and have a healthy balance. Not to say that you can't do that. I don't know that a camp necessarily is for me, but I would love to if the National Training Center got moved maybe to another place and there's new leadership involved in our sport, I would certainly love to help out. And as I'm sure with many former athletes, that they don't really call back to ask them to help out when it comes to those national team training camps. We should see a lot of those young and former champions come back to the sport and help out in that way. But you don't see them being offered any kind of positions to come and help at the National Team Training Center. And that's unfortunate because those girls who have competed more recently do understand what that's like, and they can be so valuable to Team USA.
Right, I completely agree. Have you actually reached out to anyone as a part of the Magnificent Seven, Amanda or Carrie Strug or any of them?
Not in particular to maybe have them speak out or anything. I'm not out to beg anyone to speak out, and everybody's experience is different. So I know a lot of people also have still a lot of fear, and they're afraid to speak out, and I think it comes at the right time for everyone if they ever get to that place where they feel they, you know, their experience wasn't the way it should be. A lot of people who may have been through this kind of situation, they're afraid to speak out, to be honest. And a lot of them have skin in the game. They've turned into coaches after they were athletes. They have a gymnastics club. They want to place, you know, girls on the national team and possibly on the world and Olympic team and be front and center at those camps where they have an opportunity for their gymnasts to be placed on an international assignment for competing. Mm-hmm. So a lot of them know that if they speak out, they will be blacklisted and they will have an uphill battle, and they don't want that for their athletes, but they don't want that for their gym. And so it's very difficult for anyone to speak out who, if they don't have skin in the game, it's different, but most of the athletes still have to go through the governing body to get any opportunities, and it all kind of, all of that will shut completely out for them so that they'll be on the list where they'll never get a call again to do anything if they say something. And that's unfortunate because that fear is what stops people from speaking the truth.
Right, that is very unfortunate. And you hear about things like that happening all the time, and you absolutely hate to hear about that. That's like you said, it's very unfortunate. We have a caller coming in now. Her name is Kate from California. Hey, Kate, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Hi, great, thanks. How are you?
Good. You have a question?
Oh yes, my question is just about the scoring that's going on these days. I was wondering if you, Dominique, thought the scoring had become tougher, more nitpicky with the new code of points, and also if the U.S. gymnasts are overscored in domestic meets. I've just heard a lot of people say that our gymnasts get bigger scores when it's a meet that's only with U.S. athletes, and I was wondering what you thought about that.
Good question. In the U.S., it has been noticed in the past that they do get a little bit of favoritism in the United States, which is understandable. They want our girls to be pumped up with you know, good scores and things like that, and they want to encourage them by boosting their confidence with that. However, sometimes when you go internationally, the scoring is definitely more strict, and these international judges are going to be looking at every connection to make sure that it's absolutely connected. Sometimes in the United States, you may squeeze one of those connections that doesn't look like connection, but maybe you're a world champion and you get by with it, or maybe you have a name in the sport and you can get by with it. So they sometimes overlook those things and they give you kind of a pass. But, you know, it doesn't happen all the time, but every now and then, you know, something that we may see from the audience, it just maybe isn't connected, but then they get the value anyhow. So that does happen, and you're right. Internationally, you're going to see the scores a little bit more strict at the Olympics coming up here than you saw at the Nationals and at the Trials. But if they do their routines really, really well and there's no deductions, you'll see scores similar in the same, you know, field that they were in. But you're right to say that. I think it's a fair statement to say that internationally they become a little more strict and they give a little bit more gifts when there's scored domestically.
Right. Kate, do you have any more questions?
No, that was all. Unless you just want to, if you have any thoughts about the new code of points and how it changes the scoring overall.
Oh, yes, the new code of points. Well, you know, I wasn't a big fan of it from the beginning, but the athletes don't get much of a say in that. Unfortunately, I was on that. I guess there were a bunch of athletes who had signed a petition that we didn't really think that it was heading in the right direction for our sport, but it passed, and it's now we have to accept it, and it's part of our sport, and we all accepted it. You know, change is difficult, but an open-ended scoring system, it's difficult sometimes because I think we lose a lot of the fans. The diehard fans will always, you know, come back to gymnastics, but I think a lot of the popularity and understanding of the sport, when people come and watch it, let's say every 4 years at the Olympics, they're a little bit lost. So, you know, again, I'm not a huge fan of it, but I've accepted it, and I think it's just part of our sport now, and we just have to move forward with it. I would love to see the 10-0 brought back because I'm a huge fan of the 10-0, and I think it's such an icon in our sport. That number, everybody knows what it means. So I would love to see that come back at one point, but I just don't know if we've gone too far away from it that it's the point of no return.
Yeah. Kate, thanks so much for the call.
Thank you.
Thanks. Wow. So the point system. How long have you actually been following that? Or have you been following that since you were a kid?
Well, because it's changed recently. It was the value of your routine was up to a 10.0, and now after a lot of debate over this new code changing, there's a challenge now with it a little bit, but people have accepted it, and it's okay now. It's moved on to where everybody's not really talking about it as much. There are some people that wonder if it'll ever go back, but it is something you watch in our sport because everybody remembers the 10.0, and it's just it's just a shame that we can't use it, you know, anymore in the same way we used to because it was just such a special number, and everybody knew that a 10.0 was perfect, and now it's hard to attain that perfection through the score. I mean, you can guesstimate, but it's not the same as it used to be.
Right. Well, getting back to your memoir, Off Balance, if no one heard me say it five times before, this is an amazing book. I absolutely love it myself, and I have a lot of friends and family that love it as well. And you have a younger sister, Christina, but in the first chapter, you speak about the first time you found out you had another sister, and her name is Jen. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. Well, I received this letter in 2007 about You know, well, it was at the time from somebody I didn't know, but come to find out, it was a long lost sibling who was looking for me for about 4 years. She was given up at birth by my parents, so she's a biological sister. We share the same DNA, and we can't believe it. I mean, she can't believe it sometimes that, you know, that everything's come full circle, and she always knew that she was Romanian and was adopted. Her parents told her that when she was very little, but it was only about at the age of 16 where they asked her, you know, well, she asked them, she said, is there anything about my adoption that you're keeping from me? Not really thinking that they would, because they were very honest, but they just said, well, there's one thing, because they had figured it out a while back, and, you know, there it was, my parents and family name on the adoption document. And so she knew immediately what that meant because she followed my career. And it was just very, very shocking for me. You can imagine the whirlwind of emotions that I went through and just the shock of my life, because I had no idea that she was out there and she was looking for us, and me and my youngest sister, Christina. But, you know, in the end, it's a happy ending. I'm so happy that she found us, and that she was given up for adoption. I just want to add that she had no legs, and I think that her journey in life has just been incredible, and I'm just so proud to call her my sister.
She is absolutely amazing person. She is so sweet. I mean, I've talked to her a few times on Facebook, Jen, and I think that she and I saw her interview on 2020, and she came from a fantastic family. It seems like, and what you said a moment ago, how she followed your career, and I think it's so. And I've used the word cool, that she was such a big fan of yours, and to find out that that she was your sister, that doesn't happen anywhere.
Oh, yeah, I know. To the whole situation was and still is to a degree emotionally unpredictable. You know, I'd had this gold medal at age of 14. I left home to become emancipated in a very public ordeal at 17. And up to this point, you know, I didn't think that anything could shock me in my life. And boy, was I wrong. When Jen came into my life, I was in the midst of my final exams. I was 9 months pregnant. My father was dying of cancer. And I was becoming a mother, and I was just, oh, my gosh, I also was gaining a sister at the same time. So it was really such an unbelievable time. I mean, when I sit back and I think about it, sometimes I still can't believe it was my life. I feel like I've been living a movie. But good things happen, you know, to those who persevere, and good things happen to those who forgive, and I've also forgiven my family, because that was very important, and that's one of the themes in my book is forgiveness, because I needed to heal and move on, and it was important for me to do that, because I can't imagine what they were going through in their lives, and it's really unfair for me to judge them, because, mm-hmm. you know, they tried their hardest to do everything they could to, you know, for me and my sister and in our career and just everything they could as parents. And, of course, I was disappointed, though, for a while, because I had every right to be disappointed because I didn't know. But I'm glad that things are moving forward now and we're in a good place in our life. And, you know, Jen's a great human being. I'm just so glad that she's my sister.
Yeah, and it's absolutely amazing, like I said a moment ago. And how long did it actually take you from the moment you found out? How long did it actually take you to come public with it? Or I guess you didn't really come public with it until the book, right?
Right, right. Well, it was important for me to, you know, just prepare everybody, our families and Jen, and just also develop a relationship. I didn't think it would be fair to throw this out into the public before Jen and I and Christina, we could all handle this, and our families, it was all going to come out the right way. I'd already been in the process of writing a book. So I wanted to make sure that everybody was in a good place when it came out, healthy emotionally, you know, everything was ready to come out. And we were in a good place. Our sisterhood was in a good place. I had the right amount of time that we dedicated to it because that was important to me. You can't just throw this information out there and be unprepared, because it's a lot. It's a lot on our families. It's a lot on you know, everybody just speculating what happened. So I wanted to make sure that I was able to share the story the way that it was supposed to be, rather than it leaking in a way that it got twisted like a game of telephone. I wanted to make sure it was up there the right way, and all, for all of our families. I didn't want anybody to have any negativity from it all, and I knew that my book would strike a nerve with a lot of people for a lot of different reasons, but it's more than just a gymnastics memoir. It's a multi-layered memoir. There's a human interest story involved. There's my sports story. There's my family dynamics. I mean, there's so much that I was releasing. So it was important for me to, you know, tell my sisters, hey, this is going to be very heavy, but it's going to be also very empowering and uplifting, and I really feel like we're going to help people with our story and my personal story as well. So that was important to me, and that's why it took time to, you know, to make up for 20 years. This is tough, but we did take the proper time, and we have a good relationship right now, and I'm just very thankful for that.
All right. Well, and I think that's great, and I honestly, I hope that you all keep going, growing closer and closer every day. And now everyone can go to your website, Dominique hyphen or dash Machiano.com, to find out about latest news. And you're doing book signings as well across the U.S., and I hope you'll come to Georgia real soon. And I know one thing that hasn't been mentioned, I want to mention you have a four-part book series called The Go for Gold Gymnastics.
Yes, for middle graders, and it's by Disney Hyperion, and this was also another project that I was working on parallel to my memoir, but I really wanted to give young children something authentic to the world of junior elite gymnastics, and I wanted to give that to them so they could have something to read about and be inspired about and follow these four young gymnasts' lives and something to talk about in the gym. But it was really important to me that I was able to give that to these children. And through the series, it reaches a different audience. These children have come up to me and just they've been so excited about it. They're giddy about it. And it was really important for me to be authentic to gymnastics. And it really is. So thank you for mentioning it.
Right. Oh, not a problem at all. You may have answered this already, but do you think that what you went through at a young age, it taught you to be so much more of a better person and has given you the ability to be able to teach these kids the right way to do gymnastics? Because you did go through a bad time at the Carolis and you saw the bad way to do it. And now as an adult, you know the better way to do it. So has it really taught you that?
Certainly, I feel I'm more resilient from all of my experiences, absolutely. I feel that I can share the message that I think needs to be shared, the proper message and the healthy message. And to know, I think I'm more passionate about having children experience the sport in such a positive way. And the fact that I was able to get my love back for the sport after it had been literally sucked out of me for so long, I'm so glad that when my husband came into my life, we found... Well, he had always been passionate about gymnastics, but he helped me find my passion again, too, because I was a little bit at a low point where I didn't want to, you know, go back to the sport for a while. I felt beaten down from it, and not necessarily the sport. I should say the people in the sport, those self-serving adults who had hurt me and made me lose my self-confidence. But I'm in such a good place now where I can teach these kids and talk to them about, you know, what's really important and how to uplift them and how to help them have a great experience. That's my main goal when I go to these camps, because I want these kids to feel good about themselves. I want to help uplift them, and I want them to know that that's important to build their self-confidence, and coaches should be helping do that. And that makes me feel really good because I think the kids really benefit from that.
Right, and I think that makes you a great person for doing that, and I think that it's wonderful that you are doing that. And you mentioned Mike, your husband. You have such a beautiful family with you and your husband, Mike, and you have two adorable kids. Are your kids into gymnastics as well?
Yes, they're currently in gymnastics. They play around. They love their little classes, and, you know, gymnastics will always be a part of me and my husband's life, and if our children choose to pursue it, excellent. We know the next step, so we know the challenges too, and the sacrifices. But the sacrifices are a good thing in our sport. Those things are great. They shape and mold, you know, the children, as long as they have the right people in their lives, meaning the coaches who influence them properly. So So if they want to do it, we're just going to support them. We're just going to make sure we couple them up with the correct coach who will care about their emotional and physical well-being first and not the medals first, because that's really important to us. Because if they have a good experience, they will excel, and that comes later. So as long as they're healthy in the sport, that's my main goal, is to keep them happy and healthy, and know that there will be tough times because sacrifices come along with sports and injuries sometimes too. So we just got to nurture them and keep their head in the right place. But if they choose to do something else like swimming or be an artist or music, we're going to support their passion. We want them to lead the way. And then, you know, that's what we're here for, is to support them.
Right. And I think that's what's so great, if they do decide gymnastics, is that both you and Mike have been into gymnastics, and you both of you know exactly what to look out for, and you know exactly the way that they should be taught and exactly the way the trainer should be talking to them. So I think that's really special. Well, everyone can find your memoir, Off Balance, at Amazon.com, on bookshelves nationwide, and Dominique-Machiano.com. Dominique, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it very much.
Well, we appreciate you coming on with us. And like I said, and I believe you have an interview tomorrow with Jim Rome. Is that right?
Yes, yes. It's going to be on fire, yeah.
Yeah, I love Jim Rome. And what time is that going to be?
It's going to be at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
1 p.m. Eastern Time. Great. Well, I look forward to seeing it then. People can also find you on Twitter at DMachiano and on Facebook as well. Dominique, thank you again so much, and I hope that y'all have a great evening.
Thank you. You too. Have a good one.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
Right, bye-bye.
And that was Olympic gold medalist Dominique Machiano. It's such a pleasure her joining us. I've been wanting to have her on for some time now, and it was such a pleasure her coming on with us for this interview. Like I said, you can find her on Twitter at DMachiano. That's DMocEanu. Check out her website, Dominique-Machiano.com. And you can find her memoir, Off Balance, on bookshelves nationwide, Amazon.com, her website, and everywhere else. I encourage everyone to pick up a copy of this. It is a great book. I know you will enjoy it. Thank you all so much for joining us tonight. Sunday, this upcoming Sunday, we have Brent Dusing on our show. Brent is the founder of a game on Facebook called Journey of Jesus. We were supposed to have Brent on a week ago. He had some troubles calling in or something, but we're going to get back on track with him, and we're going to have an interview with him. So please come back for that. That's Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Again, please follow us on Twitter at DrewBTR. And Facebook, WAEJ The Drew Show. Again, thank you all so much for joining us. We had a great show. We look forward to next time. Good night, everyone.